You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Down with the king!
Yo, you know what it's about, so let's tell them why you're mad.
You know what really grinds my gears?
I'm mad!
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Now for something completely different.
It's time for a royal rant presented by the Kings of Sport.
And welcome to a very special edition of the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African Americans, a.k.a. the undefeated, undisputed, internationally renowned, pound for pound, greatest sports program in the world today. I am your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, rejoined. He's back, at least for this week, folks, by my partner in crime, the one and only Marcus Vanderberg. What is going on, brother?
You know, when you said the word undefeated, I sort of cringed for a moment. You know why, right?
Oh, Whitlock?
Whitlock, man.
Yeah, we don't need those problems right now.
No, we don't.
But that is another topic for another day. But I think what the people would like to know, Brother Marcus, before we get into this special edition of the Royal Rant focused around the quote-unquote fight of the century, Mayweather and Pacquiao, listeners of the show, if they heard last week's episode, they know that you were out. And real quick, want to send a shout-out to Dennis Black and Asian, the professor, KME, as well as Sierra for filling in. But how was your honeymoon, brother? Were you out there in the ocean, and did you enjoy yourself with your wife? And also, how many times at the bar on the cruise ship did people call you Isaac?
Zero times, but I did have a couple people on the boat mistaking me for Dominican, which always makes me happy. And it irritates my wife because she swears I want to be Dominican. You know, sometimes I like to, you know, pretend in certain occasions. You know how it is.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there, brother. I know what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
So in 9 months, we can expect a little light-skinned bundle of joy?
No, not right away.
Marcus don't waste no time.
No.
Was this your first cruise?
First cruise. It was good. You know, 7 days is a long time on ship, as I found out towards the very end, as we both found out. But the days in port are great, but when you're stuck on the boat just traveling, those days become very long. And I'm at a bit beach guy, big pool guy, so I did a lot of reading. I read The Death of WCW, which is fascinating. I've never read it before. For all the shit I say about TNA, WCW was a fucked up place. I mean, some of the stuff in that book is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, man. But since you did bring up the subject real quick before we get into our boxing coverage, what did you think of the big news from TNA this week?
The Billy Corgan thing, I mean, he had to do something. Do I think it's going to work? No. I mean, listen, his credentials really, he's famous, he's rich, and he's a wrestling fan. What really is the difference between that and yourself besides being famous and rich? You're a wrestling fan. That's what it comes down to. You know, he had the promotion, but he had the promotion because he had money. Do we actually know what his promotion actually did? I've seen a couple of the matches, but I didn't hear really anyone raving about how great of a job he did with this, this indie set. So I do worry that this might be one of the chapters in the death of TNA. And I'm not going to say he's going to be like Vince Russo bad, but I just think that he might be in over his head a bit.
Yeah, that's my big concern. Like, I don't think that he's going to be a Vince Russo or even an Eric Bischoff in terms of some of these ridiculous storylines, but I do think that he's some, I don't know if he knows how much time it's actually going to take to run a company. And as mutual friend Brian Mann alerted me to, like, he's got a 40-day tour coming up in the middle of the summer.
Oh, no.
So it's like, you know, he would only have been on the job for maybe a month or two, and then he's going to be on the road. So it's like, I don't know if he realizes how big a commitment this actually is.
And I do wonder what the wrestlers think, because here's a guy who's not a worker, who really has no connections to the industry, when you think about it, on the surface. And now he's going to be calling the shots on the creative team. I do wonder if there's going to be any backlash towards him.
It's going to be real interesting, because I think on the one hand, I appreciate that, you know, he has the passion for the business. And if you read the story that came out of Variety, you know, he at least acknowledges that wrestling has not had the best portrayal of women or gay folks or minorities. And I appreciate that he says he wants to do something about that. I just don't know if it's too little too late at this point for TNA.
And that also requires hiring women and hiring minorities to write these stories, because if they're coming from the mind of Billy Corgan, who's not a woman and who's not a minority, then we're back to square one.
Yeah, we'll see if Billy can help TNA have a smashing future, or will this be the promotion's swan song?
Well, future did this.
But enough of this TNA talk. We'll have plenty of time to talk about their future with Billy Corgan in the weeks and months ahead. But I think what everybody is waiting to talk about, what everybody is coming to this Royal Rant for, is our thoughts on the fight of the century, the undefeated and some would say very unlikable Floyd Money Mayweather taking on Manny Pacquiao. Marcus, you are currently in Vegas. What else is new? What have been your experiences thus far in the lead up to this fight?
Well, I have a story for you, and you're going to love this story.
All right.
So I'm in Vegas. I got here in time for the press conference today, for the final press conference, which was pretty whatever. And then as I'm leaving the media center, I'm going back to the hotel, and I got my headphones on listening to my podcast, and a woman stops me, and I look over, and she goes, "Excuse me," and I take my headphones off, and she goes, "Do you know where the media credential office is?" And I look up, and I was like, "I do, Michelle Beadle. Let me show
wow.
you."
Wow.
Yeah, so I was like, "Oh, yeah, I know who you are." Very nice. I know it's probably disappointing that she was nice, because aren't you...
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say anti, but I'm definitely not a Beatle fan. And it has nothing to do with her actual work, because I think on Sports Nation, she's very good. On the show that she had by herself on NBC Sports, not so much. My bigger issue with Michelle Beadle is the fact that she rides so hard and holds grudges so long against people like Michael Vick or LeBron James, or the way that she publicly came at Stephen A. Smith. I thought that was something that could have been handled differently. So my problem is that side of Michelle Beadle, but I'm sure she's a nice person.
Very nice person. And I also had a good conversation, a personal conversation with Jeremy Schapp.
Oh, okay.
I've talked about it on the show, I think briefly, in one of the episodes, but I have Crohn's disease, and Jeremy Schapp has it as well.
Really?
And I've been wanting to meet him just for that very reason. I mean, I respect his work and everything, but it's hard to meet people, especially in the industry, who have Crohn's disease. So he said that to me during the press conference, and I said I got to talk to him. So very nice guy. We just sort of chatted about health and both of our healths and, you know, the process he's been through. So so I had two good ESPN.
Oh, cool.
Encounters today.
So that's where Brother Shap gets the curly hair from.
There you go. It's that medication.
So all this time, I thought Jeremy Shap was white. He just light-skinned it. he is the lightest of the light-skinned.
Yes.
So you had a good experience with Beadle and with Jeremy Shap. What was the experience like at the press conference?
Oh, it wasn't as much of a zoo as I thought it would be. I don't think a lot of the media's in town yet. It's still pretty early in the week. I think by the way in Friday, it'll be a total nightmare, but today wasn't too bad in terms of being just a shit show.
Yeah, I think like the only major media that has a presence there is ESPN, because they're all over this thing, and especially Stephen A. And Skip doing their deal out there. So did you run into either one of those dudes?
Did not, no. Or Carrie Champion.
Carrie Champion would probably be a cool person to talk to for a little bit.
Yeah, she's nice.
So one thing that people have been telling me and hit me up on social media is while they're excited about this fight, they thought that this would be a much bigger sideshow. You know, the kind of deal that we always get in boxing where there's a lot of people, you know, hyping stuff up. You know, we haven't even really gotten the typical Floyd heel promo out of this thing. And you know, I think it's going to be an interesting night, but thus far, Marcus, I haven't felt that they've really gotten their P.T. Barnum on with this thing. What has been your perspective on how Floyd and the Pacquiao camp have both been promoting this thing?
I mean, you have to go back a few years before you can find when Floyd was actually a heel. His last few fights, he's been pretty much a babyface going into this thing.
What was the last one? What was the fight where the dude was like, he's a woman beater, man?
Robert Guerrero.
Okay, because that's the one I'm thinking about most recently, and that was what, 2010? 2011?
No, that was more recent. That was probably 2013.
Oh, that was, wow. Okay, I didn't realize it was
2012
that.
Or 2013.
Okay, so
that was more his father trying to get under Floyd's skin. I don't think Floyd really took the bait in terms of, I mean, he could have went after Robert for his personal issues that he was going through at the time.
Yeah.
But he really didn't go down that road. I think if you go all the way back to, probably like the De La Hoya days, or maybe Ricky Hatton before. Oh, wow. You can go back to, even Marquez, he didn't really go after Marquez, I don't think.
Yeah, you're right, because Floyd was definitely the heel going into that fight, but then when the British fans booed the national anthem, that's when the Americans started rallying around Floyd.
But he's been bitter on this whole, you know, respect thing, and I think deep down he really does respect Pacquiao, and, you know, at the end of the day, he knows that in order to make this paycheck, it takes two people to fight, so he's not going to go over the top. I think the bigger beef has been with sort of Mayweather Promotions and Bob Arum, Top Rank.
Yeah, I would agree. And you mentioned that Floyd has respect for Pacquiao. One thing that has been interesting in the run-up to this fight, Marcus, has been the lack of respect, and some would say the justified lack of respect that some in the media, chief amongst them, I guess, would be Keith Olbermann on ESPN, that have been calling for folks to boycott this fight because of Mayweather's history with domestic abuse. So what's your take on this slant in terms of people shouldn't watch this fight because watching this fight puts money in Floyd's pocket?
You know, I get the arguments, and, you know, I as a journalist, it's hard. You have to sort of separate Floyd, the fighter, compared to Floyd, the human being. And, you know, I respect the hell out of Floyd, the fighter, and what he's done in the ring. But at the same time, I don't really endorse Floyd's lifestyle and what he's done in the past. So it's one of those things where it's like, this isn't like the first time Floyd has fought where he's had all these allegations. And I know it really stemmed up from the Deadspin story last year. But there were plenty of times to protest this man. And did anyone protest? No. And, you know, this stuff was all pretty public record. The man went to jail. We all know he went to jail for. It wasn't a surprise. He came out of jail. People still bought his fights. So, you know, while I get the protests and everything like that, I don't know. It feels like it's sort of too late in his career. We've sort of created this monster, for lack of a better term, by supporting him the way we have, knowing his history. So he's got one fight left after Saturday, and that's it. So, you know, if you're going to protest, more power to you on Saturday by not watching this fight. But really, the damage has been done.
And the thing is, these things have been out there, like you said, Marcus, pretty much for a decade. Like, anybody that's wanted to check out Floyd's history and his backstory, they could have done that. And ESPN and Showtime and the other networks, they've been complicit in this thing, like you said, creating the monster. And I think that, yes, as a human being, I find Floyd Mayweather to be a bit despicable. But as a boxer, you cannot argue the man's greatness. And I feel the only reason maybe not the only reason, but the main reason that this has become such an issue is because we are living in a post-Ray Rice world.
Yeah, that's fair. But, you know, just to look at the music industry, you know, it, granted, you can't really compare what Floyd Mayweather has done to what Chris Brown did, but I don't see anyone not listening to Chris Brown because of what he did in his past. So it's like, you know, if we're going to be consistent across the board, that's one thing. But if we're going to pick and choose who we support and who we don't support, especially in the African-American community, that's where it becomes tricky because, you know, either you're all in for this or you're not. And the people who aren't watching the Floyd fight probably listen to Chris Brown. So it's like, all right, well, you can have it. You can't have it both ways. You know, you got to either be all in or all not.
And the thing is, like, boxing traffics in this stuff. Boxing traffics in racial stereotypes, social stereotypes. Boxing traffics in good guys and bad guys, heroes and villains. For everyone who is not putting down their money because they want to protest this thing, there are 10 people that are putting down their money just for the fact that they want to see Floyd get his ass kicked.
I mean, hell, look at Mike Tyson. Well, I mean, Mike Tyson went to jail.
Yeah.
And he's now a beloved figure.
Beloved, yes. He's got cartoons. He's got a cartoon out, Marcus.
I mean, he can do no wrong at this point, and he served his time. Floyd has served his time, and he's got one civil lawsuit that he's currently dealing with. But in terms of the arrest and stuff, I mean, he hasn't been in trouble. So, you know, we're a country of second and third chances, and, you know, I think... And I want to sometimes give him the benefit of the doubt because he has, it appears, attempted to turn his life around in these recent years. But I'm curious to see what happens when he does retire, if he sort of dips out of the public eye. And when he does return, whether that's in the ring or promoting or what the response will be after he's retired.
Yeah, and 2 points. I think one, that you mentioned we're a nation of second and third chances. And I think that that is even more true and more correct and magnified when the person that is getting those chances are exceptionally talented. You talk about Chris Brown. You talk about, you know, Mike Vick. You talk about some of these rock stars out there that are doing despicable things, but all it takes is one hit and we're back on the bandwagon. You talk about your boy Justin Bieber out there acting a damn fool and people are back on the Justin Bieber bandwagon. And if Floyd Mayweather was not as great as he is, which is the thing that I think is being shrouded a little bit and clouded a little bit by all of this discussion about who he is as a person, if Floyd was not as great as he is in the ring, he'd probably been gone 5-10 years ago because with the track record in terms of the domestic abuse combined with mediocrity in the ring, you're not going to last that long. Even in a sport like boxing, which is, it's not a church choir. It's a sport of hard people. And sometimes hard people come with baggage from that hard life. And so I think that once that bell rings, it's going to be, all that stuff is going to be in the rearview mirror. Now, the other point that I will say, going back to ESPN, you know, I'm not...
Just one more thing about that. If you want to hold anyone accountable, you're not going to expect... You can't expect Floyd Mayweather to say, hey, look, guys, because of my past, I'm going to step away from the sport and not fight. It's not going to work that way.
Yeah, don't give me any more money.
Yeah. The Nevada Athletic Commission could really step in here, and we'll talk about John Jones at the very end of the show, but if the Nevada Athletic Commission, during the licensing hearing, sort of, you know, any time during the process when he was arrested, after all the 6 times he's been charged, they've never really stepped up and said, hey, look, you've done X, Y, and Z, you've served X amount of time in jail, we're not going to license you in Nevada. And the reason that is, Floyd brings too much money to the state, and it's a bit of a concept because they're in a situation where if they say no to Floyd, the state is missing out on millions of dollars of money. So if you want to point the finger at anyone, let's start at the NAC and the fact that he continues to get licensed without any questions.
That is a very valid point. Yeah, and it's like, yeah, if the people who are in charge of this thing don't seem to have, I'm not going to say they don't have a problem with his personal past, but they don't want to take action against his personal past, then I'm not going to deprive myself of watching a fight I've been waiting for years because of my objections to his domestic abuse past. But the second thing was in regards to ESPN and the people that are criticizing Stephen A. Smith for the piece he did with Floyd Mayweather, which mm-hmm. I thought it was just ridiculous and hilarious and entertaining and everything that the hype of a fight should be. And they're like, oh, this is irresponsible, and ESPN is glorifying Floyd Mayweather. On the same channel, on the same network, they had an hour-long Outside the Line special, which went in-depth with Floyd's past and Floyd's history. And so I cannot fault ESPN, and I am one that would like to find fault with ESPN at every turn. I'm not buddies with Michelle Beadle like one Marcus Vandenberg.
But
I can't fault I can't fault ESPN for that. You know, they're the entertaining and sports programming network, and I think they give you the whole picture. They give you the fun stuff with Stephen A. and Skip, and then they give you the hard-hitting stuff with Bob Lee, and I think that's the way it should be.
There's a lot of fingers to be pointed in the direction of ESPN when it comes to, especially their boxing coverage, which is just so over the top. But you really can't accuse them of being biased towards one camp or one fighter. You know, Stephen A. is a friend of Floyd. That's been no secret. And, you know, ESPN allowed Stephen A. to do his segment. But as you mentioned, they've been pretty balanced about how they've covered Floyd in his personal life. And I'm sure if Pacquiao had the same issues in his personal life, we would get the quote-unquote pro-Pacquiao piece. And then also we would get the hard-hitting news. So I don't think they're showing any favoritism or any sides in this.
Are you ready? Are you ready? For the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
To be or not to be dope, that's the question. Are you gonna stop or keep on rushing? Faster, faster, quicker than the next man.
And now, let's move Marcus from all this preliminary stuff to what people really want to know. They come to the Kings of Sport for opinions, for information, and we're going to give them both right now because it is time, Marcus Vandenberg, to actually break down this fight and give some predictions for the fight of the century. And since you are Mr. Vegas, you're exactly like Floyd Mayweather, except you respect women and you don't have that much money, so I'll let you go first.
Prediction for the fight, I have Floyd winning by split decision. I think the fight will not live up to the hype. It's sort of Floyd's style, his nature in the ring. I think Pacquiao will make the mistake of coming at Floyd, and unless he makes the proper adjustments to Floyd's defensive style, I think that could be an issue for Pacquiao later in the fight. You know, Pacquiao's really never fought a technician like Floyd, and I do wonder if he has enough in his arsenal because he doesn't have that knockout power like he did coming up. So, you know, the chances of Manny knocking out Floyd are probably slim to none, really. So in order to Pacquiao to win this fight, he's going to have to outbox Floyd. And I don't think there's anyone in the world who can outbox Floyd at this point. So give me Floyd by split decision.
Okay, so that's what you think will happen. Now, Marcus, let me ask you a follow-up. What do you want to happen in the fight? Is what you want to happen different from your prediction for the fight?
No, I would like Floyd Mayweather to win the fight. I think, as we mentioned earlier, about separating Floyd, the fighter, compared to Floyd, the human being, when you look at his fighting resume, I would like to see him finish his career 50-0 and sort of complete that chapter. And, you know, I think when we look back 20 years from now as boxing fans, and we will realize how talented this dude was in the ring. And, you know, we've I don't think we've ever seen a fighter go 50-0. I think the record, I believe, is 49-0. Let me try to find out. But just the fact that he's been able to maintain at the top of his game for this long, I think he's up there in terms of an impressive feat with Bernard Hopkins, who I find just as impressive to what he's done post-prison with someone else who served his time and has been redeemed and beloved by the fans. But, you know, I think Floyd will live up to his promise of walking in late September, and that'll be the last time we see the man fight in the ring.
If Floyd, right now Rocky Marciano is 49-0.
That's right, Rocky Marciano.
So, you know, every time somebody bring up boxing, somebody got to pull Rocky Marciano at their ass.
Actually, he would tie Rocky because Pacquiao would be 48, and then the fight September would be 49. So, I take back what I said then. I think there will eventually be a paycheck that will lure Floyd out of retirement to go for 50, you know, and then he'll quit for good.
Okay. All right. So Marcus has Floyd winning by split decision. And I think that I'm going to agree, Marcus, but I'll take it even one step further. I think that Floyd is going to win by unanimous decision.
Okay.
You already brought up the fact that Manny is not going to be able to outbox Floyd Mayweather. You already, you know, mentioned Floyd. You know, he's one of the best defensive fighters we've ever seen. Like, to me, my all-time favorite fighter in terms of a defensive boxer, a counterpuncher, was Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker. And Floyd Mayweather, to me, is as good, if not better, than Sweet Pea was. And that's saying a lot coming from me. So I don't think that, you know, he's going to be able to knock Floyd out. His only shot, like I think we talked about 2 weeks ago, if he doesn't get Floyd early, he's not going to get Floyd. Like, if he doesn't get Floyd in I'd say by round four, it's not going to happen. Because Floyd is not going to be the type of fighter that gets careless. He doesn't give you that many opportunities to connect with him, you know, with that knockout punch to begin with. And once he knows the fight is in hand, I think it's going to be one of those quote-unquote boring Floyd Mayweather fights where Manny is basically chasing Floyd for the last 7-8 rounds. And, you know, Manny's not going to be somebody that I think Floyd just makes look silly, but I do think that he will win each round, you know, even if it's by a close margin, and go on to that unanimous decision. Now, here's where it gets fun. Here's where it gets crazy, Marcus, and you know, this wouldn't be the first time that you've called me crazy before on this show. Nope. I think I'm going to go. This might be the most ludicrous statement since a former host of the show started talking about Bray Wyatt, but this is what I want to happen, Marcus. I want that same exact scenario that I just described to happen, but somehow Manny Pacquiao gets the controversial split decision.
Oof.
And we get Mayweather Pacquiao 2.
You know, I mean, he's been pretty adamant about no rematch.
But do you think if that happens and Floyd, and people generally can see that Floyd was robbed, or the outcome was disputed, do you think Floyd is like, no, man, I'm not going out like that?
I'm torn because I don't see the rematch happening in September. But he likes to fight May-September. I think he would have to be really screwed. Sort of like the Bradley fight where Bradley had no business winning the fight.
So this has to be one of those all-time, like, was it Meldrick Taylor, Julio Cesar Chavez?
Yeah, the fits would have to be in, and something fishy. It'd have to be a clear win for Floyd, and for some reason, the judges decided to give it to Pacquiao, and to put it on the whole, this is a lot of watch boxing, it's corrupt, it'd be one of those things. And then I think maybe that would convince him to do the rematch. Otherwise, I think he would just, he was sort of just ignored and saying in his head, yeah, I won the fight. Despite what the record says. I'm still 48 now, so.
Like, That to me would be just the craziest thing. And then, like I said, man, that's crazy. But with boxing, is it that crazy, Marcus, really?
It's not at all. And Floyd's never put himself in a situation in a fight where he's been set up to get screwed by the judges, which is impressive because, you know, boxing judges are so, at times, fickle when it comes to how they score fights. So if that were the case, September 12th would be your rematch because that's the day Floyd has already booked for his quote-unquote final fight. So book your hotel rooms now, September 12th.
Las Vegas. That would be crazy because we'd have like the fight of the century in the same year twice.
Yeah,
that would be great. But I agree. I while I would like that to happen, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Floyd is going to get the win in a fairly convincing fashion. I'm not going to say that he's just going to make Manny look like some type of chump out there, but he will definitely, you know. You will see that there's no question that Floyd Mayweather was a better fighter that night. Now, going forward, Marcus, what do you think both fighters will do after this fight, assuming that both of our predictions come true, or the general prediction that Floyd Mayweather wins? What do you think is next for Manny and Floyd?
With Floyd, my prediction will be he will fight Miguel Cotto one last time, and he will challenge... He will find a catch weight with Miguel to challenge for his world title, which would give him, I believe, totals up to 160 pounds at the moment. And that would give Mayweather another world title before he retires, which would be, I believe, 7 different weight classes. Don't quote me on that. So I think that will be his swan song, will be a catch weight fight with Miguel Cotto in September. And for Pacquiao, that's a good question. I mean, he's been doing the whole Macau thing, which hasn't really worked out for pay-per-view sales. No one really cared about the Chris Algieri fight. A good question. I don't know who would want to have the task of following up a Floyd fight against Pacquiao. But I do think he'll fight in November again, and hopefully not in Macau, back in the States.
Yeah, I don't know for Manny. I think that, you know, he can continue. Like, I don't think a loss hurts Manny as much as it hurts Floyd.
No.
So I think that, you know, Manny can just continue being Manny. You know, he can continue to dabble in politics and run his Filipino basketball team and, you know, cut his terrible records and just, you know, people continue to like and support and ride for Manny Pacquiao. Floyd, on the other hand, it's interesting. I think that Cotto fight, I'd love to see that. There's an interesting question, though, that the professor brought up last week, Marcus. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to the entire show yet. But Chris brought up the fact that he would like to see Floyd's last fight be against some young up-and-coming dude, you know, and almost like a passing the torch challenge, you know, to see if this young buck can take out the all-time legend. Do you see Floyd risking something like that for his last fight?
No, actually, the dream fight I would like to see would be Floyd versus Bernard.
Yes.
And both guys retire. I'm still holding out hope for this fight to happen. I think we're looking at the two probably greatest fighters of our lifetime, and they're both getting ready to say goodbye to the sport. And what better way to have hopped into Mayweather in, I don't call it an exhibition fight, because I know Floyd would be going out there to win it, but just as a way to usher both guys out the sport.
That'd be a great fight. Like, that would be just, like you said, not an exhibition, but it would be like neither guy would have anything to lose in that fight.
Yeah.
So that'd be cool. That'd be cool. I'm always a fan of a B-Hop fight and the lead up to, like, that would be amazing because Bernard Hopkins.
Oh, just imagine the trash talk. That's
yes.
The way it would go back just for fun. He would engage with Bernard.
And Bernard Hopkins would be like the biggest babyface ever because he's like, he'd be like, remember when George Foreman had his last comeback? and you know, the old man when he fought Holyfield and Michael Moore and all those guys. Like, that would be Bernard Hopkins. Like, so many old people would ride for him going into that fight.
Yeah.
Like, he would be the...
But in terms of a young guy in the division, there really isn't anyone ready to step up. Kell Brook isn't ready to fight Floyd. I really don't want to see Amir Khan. Yeah. Unless they did it in London. That would be cool if they did it, like, at Wembley Stadium. But that's not happening. It messes up Floyd's money. Keith Thurman's not ready. Sean Porter's not ready. So, you know, unless, you know, he's not going to do this, but if Floyd wanted to somehow find a catch weight with, like, Golovkin and risk his life and career against that monster, then sure. But, and even at 154, Floyd's the champ at 154. There's really no one in that division that is ready to step up and challenge him. So I think we have to maybe skew old, or maybe the Cotto thing at 150.
It's tough because, yeah, I think the bigger issue is something that you talked about in regards to if Floyd lost his fight close and you know, he saw himself as, you know, him being robbed, he probably wouldn't care. Like, I don't think that Floyd's motivation would be to accept all comers. You know, I mean, as great as Floyd's been, I think that's the one knock you could say against him, is that at times he did not fight the best fighters when those fights were available.
That is
so
true.
So I don't see him, you know, on his last fight or two saying, you know what, now's the time when I want to fight one of these young lions. And, you know, I don't think there's nothing for Floyd to gain in that situation.
You know, it'd be funny, and watching the King of the Ring made me think of this, if there was a tournament to determine who would fight Floyd in his final fight.
Oh, man, that'd be pretty cool. And just have Floyd do the commentary for all these fights.
Scouting each guy.
That's the other thing, real quick, from the press conference. I was listening to one of the sports shows on the way home from work today, and they were like, Mayweather said that he hasn't watched any Pacquiao footage. Come on, man. Are you buying that, Marcus? As a journalist, are you buying that?
This is nothing new. He said this pretty much before every fight. He doesn't watch tape on guys. Whether you want to believe him or not, that's up to you. But this isn't the first time he said this before about most of his opponents. He says he doesn't watch tape. He can figure out how to adjust to a guy in the ring. And if you watch Floyd's fights, your best shot at Floyd are probably those first 2 to 3 rounds, and then he figures out how to attack you and break you down. So I do believe him.
That's true. Like, that's the only reason I give Pacquiao. If he's going to knock Floyd out, it's going to happen sometime in those first 4 rounds, because as we have seen, Floyd is, in terms of thinking on his feet, one of the best fighters I've ever seen at doing that, at adjusting on the fly, you know, in terms of his game plan. But I don't know.
What would piss off people more? If Floyd got knocked out in the first round, or if the fight was 12 rounds but pretty much a bore? For $100.
You know what, Marcus? I think for a large segment of the population, they would gladly pay $100 to see Floyd Mayweather get knocked out. Even if it was in the first round. I don't know, though, because part of this whole celebration of the fight is, you know, we haven't had a fight in a long time that you could actually throw a big party for. And
yeah,
this is certainly one of them. So if I had the same experience during, was it Tyson Holyfield 2 when he bit off Evander's ear?
Yep.
And it was just like, come on, man, all this for that? And so, yeah, I could see people getting pissed off, but I think a lot of people would be so happy if Floyd Mayweather got knocked out in the first round.
And since you mentioned the price, I should probably just let the listeners know. So normally, these boxing shows, the pay-per-views, you have 3 undercard fights, sometimes maybe 4 undercard fights before the main event. This one's going to be a little different. So there's only 2 televised undercard fights before the main event. Now, this could be tricky, because if these fights go quick, this fight And normally the fights in Vegas usually start closer to 9 o'clock, could be starting closer to 8 o'clock. So if you're someone who's going to maybe go to a fight party and you're thinking, oh, I have time, you might want to just make sure and check, because this fight will probably begin earlier than normal for a Las Vegas typically fight.
And here's the last thing I kind of want to touch on in terms of boxing in general as a sport. We were talking last week with the professor KME, and he was saying that, you know, he was more interested in kind of the resurgence in boxing more so than Mayweather Pacquiao itself. And my counter to that was that we are getting, you know, the excitement about the Premier Boxing League and the stuff on NBC and the stuff on Spike and things like that, in large part because of the excitement of Mayweather Pacquiao. You know, I might be wrong on that, Marcus, but I think that this is one of those situations where boxing's never going to be, I don't think, as popular as it was in the 80s and 90s. But I think right now, boxing is probably as quote-unquote mainstream as it has been in a long time.
Yeah, it'll never be popular as it was in the 80s, but in terms of quality fights on a week-to-week basis, this is probably the best the sport has ever been in terms of boxing matchmaking. And just in terms of the cable access alone, I mean, in the 80s, you had your big HBO card and maybe a pay-per-view here and there, but and now, 2015, you can pretty much find a boxing card every weekend at this point. And usually you can find one fight that has a name that you might recognize. And that's in part because of this whole Al Haymon partnership with the PBC and him buying time. I forgot to mention to you, do you know where the Andre Ward fight will be broadcast in June? What network?
No, I have not heard that yet.
BET.
Really?
Yep.
BET is in the boxing game now?
BET is in the boxing game.
You know, Marcus, if you were still there, you'd probably be like one of the ringside analysts.
I know. I'm so bummed. It's 5 years too late.
BET Boxing with your host, Big Tigger.
Luckily, I think the broadcasting will be handled by the PBC guys, so it won't be like BET produced. So it'll just be broadcast on BET, but that just shows you the reach that the sport is having, and it makes sense. I mean, boxing is popular within the black community, and bravo to BET for taking a risk like that. And actually, looking at the schedule now, the BET show with Andre Ward is going against a NBC Sportsnet show with Adrian Broner the same night in Cincinnati.
Oh, wow.
So you have, I'm assuming it might be a little staggered because the Andre Ward fight is in Oakland, but on one night you have Adrian Broner fighting on NBC, and then you can turn over to BET and watch Andre Ward. So that just proves to you sort of the depth and the fights you're getting on a weekly basis in terms of the sport. But popularity-wise, in terms of the average casual sports fan, it'll never reach the 80s and 70s and 60s in terms of popularity.
Now, real quick, one last thing. You know, we talk about the availability now of boxing on cable, and that brought to mind like one of my favorite cable boxing stories ever, Marcus. You know, I live in Virginia, and so, you know, the biggest, closest media hub is the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get, on Comcast, we get this program called Ballroom Boxing. And it takes place from Glen Burnie, Maryland. And it's, you know, this boxing event held weekly in this big ballroom. And they televise it. And I think it was about 3 years ago. It was some ridiculous card. And the highlight of the show was the guest ring announcer who was going to perform a song. And I tuned in, Marcus. I tuned into this show. This is about 1 o'clock in the morning. And they're like, ladies and gentlemen, for our main event, we want to welcome our guest ring announcer who's going to sing a song. Give it up for JT Taylor from Coolin' the Gang.
Oh.
And JT Taylor came out there, Marcus. And I'm thinking, okay, he's going to have some backup singers or something. It was JT Taylor and two sisters dancing. That's all they did. They didn't sing. They didn't have a microphone, play instruments. They just danced while JT Taylor sang Jungle Boogie. And I guess, you know, he said, I'm a star, I'm JT Taylor. I can sing two songs when I was only supposed to sing one. He sang Jungle Boogie, and I think he sang Get Down On It.
Speaking of which, the National Anthem, which is always a special part of boxing pay-per-views, what do you think of the decision to go with Jamie Foxx?
It's very interesting. Like, I heard about that the other day, and I was like, Jamie Foxx?
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting on a couple levels. Like, I don't know. Like, Jamie's a good singer. Like, I don't think that's in dispute. So he can handle the anthem. But is Jamie Foxx at, like, he's obviously a celebrity, but is he at this moment, Marcus, at the level of celebrity that would warrant this spot? Like, Jamie Foxx is not as hot as Jamie Foxx was. Like, this isn't the peak of Jamie Foxx.
That's true, but I'm trying to be currently, would you, I mean, I would still want R. Kelly to bring back the Steppers and do that again. But I don't think that would fly with a Pacquiao camp. But listen, it's better than Tank. I mean, Tank is just usually someone who's done it before. I've seen Darius McRae sing the fucking anthem. So it's an upgrade over those two guys.
Eddie Winslow, Darius McRae?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
By the way, keep your head up, Eddie. Darius, keep your head up, brother.
Pay your child support.
That too.
Yeah.
It's a two-pronged approach. A, keep your head up. B, pay your child support.
Yeah.
So, let's see, though. Like, who is... Like, I guess I'd much rather see Jamie Foxx than, like, the hot singer of the moment, which I guess would be, like, a Taylor Swift.
Oh, now, they would... I don't know who decides the anthem singer. I'm guessing Floyd's camp. So, that would eliminate a certain shade of singers.
Wait a minute. You say it eliminates a certain shade of singers. If Floyd gets to pick it, yes. Why wouldn't Bieber be the one singing it? I mean, granted, he's not American, but still.
Yeah, no. But yeah, maybe someone like The Weeknd would have been trendy.
How about Drake? What about Drake singing it?
Drake! Oh, man.
I mean, he doesn't have any basketball games to go to now. His team is eliminated.
He doesn't. Jerry could have been funny. Chris Brown would have been funnier just for the obvious reason.
Oh, yeah. But would Chris Brown dance during the anthem? That is the question.
No, he wouldn't.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. So, yeah, I am really looking forward to this fight, Marcus, and I think anybody that is even remotely a boxing fan, like, that's the thing. Like, so many casual fans are going to be brought into the tent, at least for this one weekend, that I think it can only help the sport in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of joked off air about this, but, you know, watching stuff in Baltimore going on, I said, what better way to sort of get people off the streets and give them a chance to have a distraction than to offer the fight for free to the city of Baltimore, just so there's something going on that, you know, they can take their mind off everything going on. And hey, boxing sometimes can be decisive in terms of race, but, you know, I would watch a boxing fight for strangers I didn't know, or, you know, the dude up the street if he had the fight on. I'm sure. Take a seat and chill out. So we're not really diving into the Baltimore stuff this week, but we are aware of everything going on. We'll probably unfortunately have to discuss it next week because it doesn't seem like it's going down any.
No, and real quick on that, you know, it does affect the sports world in a way because of what happened with the Orioles. You know, they had to play a game in an empty stadium today, and then the series that was scheduled with Tampa, I think.
Yeah,
they have to go on the road now and play that. So, and we saw Ray Lewis come out and with a very impassioned statement. So, yeah, we're starting to sound like a broken record because something like this seems to happen every couple of months. So yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about this more in depth next week. But I hope cooler heads prevail, and I hope that just looking on social media, I've had a chance to get engaged with different conversations with different people. And the biggest thing that I would say is there needs to be a bigger level of empathy. I think, Marcus, I very rarely speak on behalf of black people. But I think I will take this occasion to say, you know, the people that don't get why these folks are frustrated, and I'm not condoning looting. I think that's ridiculous. But I do understand the rioting, if we can make that subtle distinction, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
But I think that black folks do not desire, for the large part, your sympathy. But I do think we would like your empathy, if that makes any sense, Marcus.
It does. And this is where I believe Floyd could become or try to shed some of his image, was if he had more of he was more in tune with what's going on in the black community. If Floyd has been outspoken this week about Freddie Gray and has raised the issue during his media availability, I think that would do a lot for what's going on. But that's just sort of not the guy he is. He's not, you know, he's boxing. I think he's just in that world, and he's really, you know, as you go back to the Ronda Rousey comments from last year, where he claims he didn't know Ronda Rousey was a woman or who she was. I just think this dude just eats, sleeps, and breathes boxing and I guess gambling to an effect. And, you know, if he was able to have more of an impact on a social culture, especially this week when, you know, this is the April 29th, the anniversary of the L.A. riots from 1982. We're seeing what's going on in Baltimore. There's been a bunch of arrests tonight in New York City. So this is an interesting time to be an African-American in the United States. And, you know, I think he could have had a bigger impact of what's going on.
I agree. And yeah, like I said, we'll have plenty of time to talk about this, because even if things are cool in Baltimore by the time we record next week, this is an issue that I don't think is going anywhere anytime soon. So, you know, that's all we're going to say about that tonight. But you mentioned both the UFC and the city of Baltimore, Marcus. And I think there is somebody in the UFC that should be more careful.
John Jones was involved in a hit-and-run accident in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where he was he hit a car and he fled the scene on foot before returning to grab some money and taking off again. The woman who was in the vehicle that he hit suffered some broken arms, and she was also pregnant at the time. So he was charged with a felony and arrested. And as a result, Dana White decided to strip him of the light heavyweight title, and he's now suspended indefinitely.
All right, let's unpack this, because I think, you know, first of all, I think the number one sentiment should be, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, the worst that happened to the lady was that, you know, she suffered the broken arm, because mm-hmm. that could have ended up a whole lot worse, especially when you consider, you know, the baby, the unborn child inside of her. And for John Jones, man, this is, we talked about him last when he went into rehab for one day, and I think at that time we were both kind of like, is this a publicity stunt? Is he really looking for help? We hope that he gets some help if he's dealing with substance abuse issues. And we saw how long that lasted. And then for him to get engaged in this kind of behavior, it speaks to me to larger issues, Marcus. That, you know, there's something deeper here with John Jones that he's got to fix, man.
Yeah, I mean, this has been going on in terms of him getting in trouble for now going on 4 years. He had the DUI. He had the suspended license while driving. And then he had the testing positive for cocaine before his fight against Dana Cormier. So Dana White has said that, you know, he had one chance left, and that was it. So I don't think we're going to see John Jones fight in the UFC again at this rate.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, unless he really turns his life around and takes the proper steps to stay clean and sober, I don't see him getting back in the cage. And it's going to take a lot of trust from John on Dana White's part to allow him back, because just imagine the outrage from the fans if he, you know, if Dana says, okay, we're going to let you back in, and then God forbid he doesn't even make it to fight night because he gets into trouble again. So he's really going to have to turn his life around, and I just hope he gets the proper help he needs, because he's fairly dealing with some personal demons, and he's just in no condition really to be fighting at the moment.
It's sad, because I think this can go one of two ways, Marcus. I think this can either be the wake-up call, finally, the come-to-Jesus moment, if you will, that John Jones needs, and he will really commit himself to getting clean, to maybe going to therapy and talking out some of these issues and really facing this head on. Or this could be the moment where John Jones says, you know, screw Dana, screw the UFC. Somebody will pay me to fight, and this is what I'm going to do.
Well, if you're Bellator,
that's an interesting question. Like, do they, like, he, of course he's a name, but do you want to do business with that guy at this point? If you're Bellator, knowing that he could probably bring the most eyes ever to your program, but also you'd have to deal with somebody that is very unreliable right now.
Well, first thing first, he's under contract still. So while he's suspended indefinitely, Dana White's not going to let him out of his contract to sign with Bellator. One, for his own probably personal health. And two, it's because they're a competitor. So there's no way he's going to allow John out until he fulfills his dates. And I don't know how many dates he has left on this deal, but I don't see him making a jump.
So then I'm going to go one step further, Marcus, than even you said. You know, you said we might not see John Jones fight in the UFC ever again. If he goes down this wrong path, this could be it forever, for good. We have seen the last of John Jones in any way, shape, or form in the sport of MMA in terms of an active competitor.
It very well could be, which would be very tragic, because he's easily the most talented guy in the company. And
I mean, we talked about it after the Cormier fight. You could make the argument that he's the best UFC fighter of all time.
Yeah, I mean, what he did to Cormier, who will now fight Rumble Johnson at 187 for the light heavyweight title, the real one, not the interim title. So that's it for DC to get his second shot. And some would say a fair shot, because as you found out, Jones was on cocaine. He had cocaine in his system at some point leading up to the fight. And whether that's an advantage or disadvantage, it's not a clean fighter. So I am curious about the fight now. I think the card is still going to be pretty good with Wyatt and fighting Vitor, and now Rumble fighting DC.
I actually think, in a weird way, it's a more interesting card for me, because I don't know what you were thinking headed into the fight, but I was predicting a Jones victory, and now I'm not sure.
Oh, man, I you know, nothing would kill me more than to see DC get destroyed by Rumble. But the way he's been fighting recently, he's been just destroying guys. And
so you thought he was going to beat Jones?
I thought he was going to beat Jones, yeah. I just think he's so powerful, and he's finally found a weight class where he can make weight fine and still have the muscular advantage he does. So I think that Rumble's going to beat Cormier, who was also, he was already training for a fight against Brian Bader, so he's not going into this fight totally cold, but he wasn't training for Rumble Johnson, so he's got 3 weeks now to sort of adjust his training camp.
Yeah, I think that, man, like you said, I was, the intrigue for me was seeing the clash of styles between Rumble and Jones, but I still thought that Jones was going to find a way to figure that out and ultimately win the fight. Now, while I would lean towards Rumble, like I'm rooting for DC. Like, I can't front.
Yeah.
Like, I hope, like, it would be, in a way, karma. Like, I'm not going to go as far as to say it's cosmic justice, but I would say there's a bit of karma, like you alluded to. You know, he lost to a guy that was on a substance, even if you think that cocaine doesn't aid you in a MMA fight. But I think that, you know, DC winning there would be some sort of satisfaction that I would receive from that.
It would be. I mean, he seems like just a nice, down-to-earth, chill dude who loves Popeye, so he's okay in my book.
Yeah, like the only time you really ever saw him, like, get hyped on somebody was with Jones, because that was personal.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is a card that we had to look forward to. But getting back to John Jones, the man in question, Marcus, how do you think this ends up? Like, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but how do you think this situation ends up for him as a fighter as well as, you know, as a human being?
I think he's going to, and hopefully with the support of his brothers, get the medical attention he needs and rehab, and whenever he does come out, I think he needs to really reflect on what is it in my life that is triggering these demons, and if it's the sport of the UFC, then maybe it's not in my best interest to be a fighter and sort of be in the fame and the spotlight like that. So maybe it's best for him to, he's got a family at home, maybe it's just best for him to transition out of the sport, maybe get into training at Winkle John in Albuquerque, his gym out there. And maybe that's his future, is to become a trainer and have a lesser role in the spotlight. And maybe that'd be good for his health and what he's going through.
That's actually a very interesting point that you bring up right there, Marcus, because it is very possible that the same whatever is inside of John Jones that has fueled him to be one of the best fighters we've ever seen. Also, the other side of that drive, the other side of that fuel is it leads to whatever problems he's had in his personal life.
Yeah.
And the two are so interconnected that, you know, if John, let's say John Jones gets all the way clean, he might not be the same guy that we knew when it comes to the cage.
Yeah.
So last question on that, though, Marcus, because this really intrigues me, because I think that he would make a great trainer. Do you think that, let's say he retires, he steps away, and he says, you know what, I got to do what's best for my family, what's best for myself, and I'm still going to train people because I love this sport. Do you see a sort of bridge coming then between John and Dana where the whatever hard feelings there are ultimately mended?
Oh, I think definitely that the hard feelings can be mended. I think Dana has proven time and time again that despite any blow-ups or departures from a company besides maybe Tito, he can normally mend fences with people. And I think the stuff that John has done, while it's been damaging to the UFC brand, it's been more damaging to himself. So, I don't think Dana would have any issue sort of mending the fences with him.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Even though, like, I find Dana White, he to me is one of the most fascinating people in sports. Like, at various times, I love the dude. Various times, I hate the guy. And there's all points in between. But I still think he's one of the most fascinating people in sports in general. So hopefully.
Well, this weekend, he's actually going to be a Yahoo Sports correspondent for us.
Really?
For the fight, yeah.
So are you going to actually have some involvement with Dana over the weekend?
I think I might, yeah.
Okay. All right, so yeah. If you get to chat to the man, let him know he's got an open invite on the show. Not that he'll take it. But
you never know.
Yeah, you never know unless you ask.
Yeah.
So that's what Marcus has going on. I think we're gonna end the rant here. This has been an interesting edition of the rant. It's been more of a rant / mini episode. Because we really haven't gone hard on anybody today. Like, we really haven't vented at anybody.
No.
So it's just kind of been one of those shows. But Marcus, for the people that are interested in what you got going on out there in Vegas on this big fight weekend. Where can they follow you? Where can they get in touch with you and find out everything that is going on with Mr. Las Vegas, Marcus Vandenberg?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Periscope. I might do some Periscoping
This weekend. What in the hell is Periscoping?
It's basically like a live video stream where you can turn on your camera, your video camera, and conduct a live stream to the audience.
Okay. Yeah, that's a new technology right there. You like Periscope, and I like, didn't you do that on the cruise? This is a family show, Marcus.
I know. You can follow me at Marco Will, MarcoWill, and thanks again to Dennis, KME, and Sierra for coming on the show last week while I was gone.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at N8 MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. You can ask me T&A questions or, as has been happening over the past couple of nights, you can ask me racial questions because if I am awake and if I have the time to do so, I don't mind engaging in racial questions as long as you're not an idiot. You can follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter. Check us out on iTunes, on Stitcher. Like, rate, review, and most importantly, share the show. Shout out to our friends at Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, and High Voltage Radio. The High Voltage Radio Network is part of the, we're part of their family, so check them out. Marcus, have you checked out the Bayside High and Drunk podcast yet?
I have not yet, no. I still need to.
Maybe you could check that out on the way home after the big weekend.
And I got one special shout out to the best unemployed wrestling announcer in the business, Taz. How you doing, buddy? I got no beef here, Taz. We love you, Taz. What's up with that? What was up with that?
Oh man, that was crazy. Like for anybody that follows me on Twitter or listens to Review and Impact, the show I do for the Fight Network with Brian Mann, I guess it was last week or the week before, about so 2 weeks ago now, after Taz was let go from TNA, Brian and I went on the show and we had some jokes. We had a little tribute for Taz featuring Bone Thugs and Harmony, The Crossroads. You know, anybody that knows me knows that I respect Taz for ECW and his commentary on SmackDown, but I have never enjoyed, or I won't say never, but I have rarely enjoyed his commentary on TNA. And so we had said that, we posted the show, and 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later, Taz hit us up on Twitter. He follows us, he's asking questions, and he DMs me. So I'm DMing with the Human Suplex Machine, now the Human Podcast Machine, and he's asking, you know, you say you respect me, then why are you guys going so hard on me like that? That's disrespectful, brother. So
now, I will say it was fine up until probably the fat fuck line, which
yes,
I cringed
yes,
and said,
yes.
Oh, okay, that's a little personal. But I think the criticism is fair game. He's in the business. He understands that. But I think that the fat fuck line was a personal jab that was probably the point where he said, all right, I'm going to address this because that's a bit much.
Yeah, and so Brian, me and Taz talked, and Brian and Taz talked, so we were having these conversations simultaneously, and I think Taz and Brian just kind of left things as it was, but Taz still follows me, and I still follow Taz, so as far as I know, that beef is squashed. And then we went on the show last week on Review and Impact and addressed the situation, and basically said, you know, in terms of, just like you said, Marcus, anything that is an opinion about the performance, that's fair game. But where the show crossed the line was when the comment was made about, you know, his personal appearance and, you know, because that's something like I think that anybody can say anything they want to about our show or any, you know, my commentary during football games or what I do with the Fight Network. That's fair game. Like, if you don't like me, if you think I suck, if you think I talk about race too much, hey, everybody's got an opinion. But if you're like, oh, I hate Nate because he's a short, fat son of a bitch, then it's like, yeah, that's a little far.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we apologized to Taz and to the listeners, because that was that's not the type of show that we want to do. And so, Brian apologized. And as far as I know, everything is cool with us and Taz.
I look forward to the Dipsy Carter apology when it comes. It's coming. What are you reach?
Well, I followed after Billy Corgan got the job at TNA. I followed him, and I was already hitting him up to come on the show and to make Mike Tenay the commissioner. And surprisingly, I haven't asked him for a job yet, but I'm sure that'll come if I get drunk enough one night.
That's a next step.
Like, Billy, if you're really serious about this minority thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm a minority. I like the product.
It was like, hey, I would not mind being an affirmative action hire as long as the check clears. You can say whatever you want to say.
Well, that's a big if.
I wonder if Billy's putting his own money into this.
Oh, no. I mean, he would be dumb unless he's getting, like, ownership. But I think they would have to mention that if he was going to be, like, a part owner of TNA. So.
Yeah. So this is very interesting. So, yeah, we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about on next week's show, Marcus, real quick, just to let the listeners know about what we will be discussing. Obviously, we'll be talking about the result and the fallout from the fight of the century, Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. We're going to talk about the NFL draft.
That little thing going on.
I think we may have to bring back Slam It or Jam It for the NFL draft.
All right.
We might talk about TNA more in depth. Like, we might have to bring the ringside rap out if more details about this thing come out. And
Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, man. We'll have to talk about Jeff Hardy. That is, like, Jeff Hardy is like, can't get right. Can't get right.
Yeah.
And we'll also be talking about the NBA playoffs, and I'm sure the Spurs-Clippers series will still be going on.
And one last TNA note, Dipsy Carter's doing Steve Austin's podcast.
Really?
Comes out next Tuesday.
Okay. So Stone Cold is like, oh, I ain't trying to, he's like, you're not going to use me for your little network to get ratings. I'm going to do my own thing and talk to Dixie.
More power to her. More power to him. And also on that note, I'm trying to run into Triple H this weekend. He's supposed to be at the fight. So
really?
Hopefully. Yeah, he's.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's down with Mayweather.
I've met him before at a Floyd fight. Him and Stephanie. So hopefully we can have a Triple H story next week.
Is he? I don't know what's going on, Marcus. Like, I think this might be the setup for some long term tension. Like, you're cool with Beetle. You're getting cool with Triple H. Like, you're becoming friends with all my enemies.
Well, I do want to introduce myself to Stephanie because I did talk to her last year on the phone. So. Triple H is Triple H, but I would like to meet his wife in person.
Who knows? You might even run into your girls again, the horsewomen.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if they're boxing fans, but I'm sure Ronda. Oh, actually, Ronda has a ticket. She got the ticket for free.
Her
destruction in the last fight. So Rousey will be here at least.
Yeah, so we'll see once again if Marcus. Like, this will be, the third time that happens, so it's not coincidence.
Yeah, this will be the. I saw him at the PWG show, and then I sat behind him at the Ronda fight, and then the ROH show. So that's the fourth time sort of stumbling across him.
Okay, yeah, this is all leading up to Marcus Vandenberg as the light-skinned J.J. Dillon.
All right.
And on that note, we are going to let Brother Marcus get back to whatever he's getting to in Vegas, which is probably sleep at this point.
Yep.
And we will see you back here next week for an all-new edition of the world's most dangerous sports show as recognized by the IBF. So unless you got anything else, Marcus, we're going to close the shop tonight.
That's it for me.
All right. So for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the godfather, Nate Milton. Let's get ready to rumble. Do I have to pay Buffer for that if I say it?
You might.
Okay, let's get ready to stumble into an exciting fight this weekend.
There you go.
There we go. Because you've been down with the king.
Well, that's it for this edition of the Royal Rant. Agree with our take? Think we're off base? Or maybe you've got something completely different that you need to vent about. Well, tell us why you're mad on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, or on Twitter, Cospod on Twitter. That's KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter.
Time is truly wasted.